Greg Ballard says he can turn around failing schools. Should he get the chance? Joe Donnelly gives back donations from Congressman Wiener. Did he do the right thing? Planned Parenthood in court, a deaf school protest. Indy wins a Big Ten competition and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 10, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard said he wants the responsibility of turning around failing schools in Indianapolis. The mayor says he will seek control of as many as 7 IPS schools that are state takeover targets. Ballard announced his new plan in a speech to business leaders. He says he will petition the State Board of Education for the ability to oversee the schools once state officials make an August decision regarding their future. The mayor did not inform IPS Superintendent Eugene White in advance of his announcement.
It is important to note that none of our charters have ever reached the level where the state could take over.
Politically, he's been pressured and pushed by various media, so it was time for him to get involved.
My very direct response is nothing should be off the table when it comes to how we provide the best education possible for our children.
Will Greg Ballard get his way? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did Greg Ballard beat Melina Kennedy to the punch here?
I think Greg Ballard needs to do a little bit more of his homework on this. I mean, he got that provision in the budget in the last hours of the session that allowed the political official in a county to take over, but it has to have the permission of the State Board of Education. And I don't think he ran this by Tony Bennett, judging from the initial responses that he gave.
Didn't seem to run by anybody.
He didn't seem to tell anybody about it, and I'm not sure how well thought out it is. So he gets he didn't do his homework. He gets a failing grade in communication here. And they haven't even determined whether they're taking over those schools or how many they're taking over first. You know, and you'd think between the same political party, when he was up, there were 3-4 blocks separate them. There could have been a little bit of communication on this. So I think he stepped on his own toes doing this, and that's a problem for him.
It's interesting timing because the decision hasn't been made yet, and he was facing criticism for not being involved in education discussion. Is he playing catch up?
Well, first of all, anybody that's surprised by this, I'm surprised that they're surprised, because he did work with Representative Boehning, chairman of the House Education Committee, to get this language put in the end of the session. They passed it successfully. That allows the executive of the city or county to petition the state board. Right. So basically what he's doing here is saying, that's what I'm going to do. And Bennett was right to say, look, we haven't decided yet which schools, if any, we're going to take over. But if we do, then we have to decide what form that's going to take. We talked about that here last week. And he's basically saying, look, I am going to petition the state board to make these charter schools so that we can take these over if we get that opportunity. So there's nothing here that should be a surprise to anybody, since he did this last session of the legislature.
He didn't, and nobody knew it.
No.
Except him and Representative Boehning.
Everybody voted for it.
It was put in the budget. Nobody even knew it was there.
Oh, nobody knows what they vote for?
That's exactly right.
Oh, really?
In terms of the budget.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly right.
Then I need to change my state representative then.
Because
it was not publicly discussed.
No, it was not discussed at all.
Well, what were you doing?
There was an awful lot of legislation going through there.
You might recall
at the end of that 5-week walkout, there was an avalanche of legislation that came through. Tell me, He could potentially be requesting the ability to take over 6 high schools and a middle school. Does a mayor really want that sort of responsibility?
Well, there are mayors around the country and cities of similar size and profile that have that authority. And I think the jury is still out, as is the case with so much of education reform. We still, I think, as a society, have not decided collectively, and I'm talking about education experts, to say whether charters are better than non-charters, whether privately run schools are better than traditional publicly run schools.
There is agreement that you need preschool education and kindergarten. We're not doing either of those.
Well, there may be some agreement that's there, but in terms of the overall formulation of this kind of policy, there are mayors in cities where this has been done, and again, we won't know probably for a few years whether that would be a wise thing or not. But just to your point, you know, about whether the timing of this, what fight works against the mayor probably is that this is at the three and a half year point of his first term. If he had done that behind the scenes, sort of laying the foundation of taking over, it might have been easier to do it with justification and without this kind of talk. If you do it at the 1-year mark or 2-year mark,
as opposed to
the 1999,
the takeover law. Yeah, okay. So the argument is that this is politically motivated. Certainly, if Ballard gets his way, there's a year transition period. He's not going to be in charge of these schools unless he gets reelected. So this is tied to his reelection.
I think that's good logic, and I'll concede that. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it is politically motivated, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that the executive of Marion County, the mayor of Indianapolis, should seek control of the schools, and it shouldn't stop at the 7 that are under scrutiny by the state. I think that there were some ideas that were forwarded by Brian Williams.
But he says he's not ready for that.
Well, of course he's not ready for that because this is easier. They should be, Mike. They should be. This has been a problem that's brewing for a long time. Brian Williams mentioned this when he had his short campaign for mayor. It's been brought up and talked about for a long time behind closed doors. The solution here is twofold, really. I think that they ought to look at putting the mayor in charge of the schools, and two, consolidating the schools in Marion County. Then you can start worrying about world-class education.
Well, and he says he's not for that either.
Because that's politically difficult. That's politically very
difficult.
But
if you want to solve the education issue.
But it's the right thing to do to solve the issue.
Okay, so, but if some of this goes even to the state, Eugene White says that the loss of state funding will be devastating to IPS.
There's no question about that.
So are you hurting other schools in the effort to save?
You clearly are. And what he's trying to do is to find a position on this, because he has been missing in action on this entire debate for 3.5 years. So he's running in
Kennedy's position is to put a list of guidelines. She needs a firmer position at this point, too, doesn't she?
She does need a firmer position. There are so many moving targets in this now. We are doing so many different things here.
Right.
You can't know whether any one of them works. You can't. But he's got to come out and say something. The problem is he should have done his homework and he gets an F.
That's one thing I will agree with you on. There are so many things going on here that nobody knows what works yet, because some of the reforms that just passed haven't had a chance to work. So we don't even know
or fail.
What
or
those are going to work.
They don't know if they're going to work or fail.
So we don't even know what those situations are. But this is at the end of a 6-year period.
Right.
And this is the way the system is supposed to work. It's the way the law passed in 99. Bennett's evaluating these things with the state board. They'll come up with a decision in August, and then they'll decide. My guess is...
You think Tony Bennett...
This is
either going to be Tony Bennett's responsibility or Greg Ballard's responsibility.
Either way.
You think Bennett wants to give it?
Well, let me finish. I don't think all 7 IPS schools are going to be on the list. It's more likely to be 1 or 2. And if it is, whatever those solutions are, and whoever they decide to put in charge of them, then they do have a responsibility, because education reform
Tony Bennett wants to give that up?
Do I think he wants to give it up? I think he wants to do what he thinks is best for those particular
schools.
One thing,
no,
one thing that I think has been encouraging all of this is that Tony Bennett is willing to spend political capital and risk his political career on this. And until we have more people risking their real political career. And I think that that's what the mayor or any mayor has to do.
And
you have to be willing to risk that in order to make it work.
And this should be all hands on deck. Everybody in the pool. We should all be part of this.
Somebody's got to be the leader.
You can't put 42 ideas in a box, shake them up, and
throw them out there. No, you can't throw them out there, but you need to have more ideas. Most people aren't even stepping up.
I don't know if there's enough political courage, you know, anywhere to muster the effort that it would take to bring together, for instance, all of the township schools and IPS. If it were easy, it would have been done back when UniGov was instituted in 70 or 71.
It's not easy.
I'm just saying, I know if anybody here thinks that the fight's over the consolidation of, for instance, township trustee offices or fire department, that looks like nothing compared to the consolidation of schools.
Politics is not necessarily bad for fixing the schools, but until they quit playing politics, then you got a problem.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should Mayor Ballard be given control of failing schools? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C. Let's see if he wins re-election first. Last week's question was, should Indiana fight the ruling that says a new abortion law is illegal? 27% said yes, 71% said no. 2% said, let special interest groups fight it. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana Congressman Joe Donnelly is giving $5,000 to charity this week. It's money that came from New York Congressman Anthony Weiner, who admitted to sending lewd tweets to women he met on Facebook. Donnelly at first said that he would wait for an ethics investigation, but after it was revealed that at least one of the tweets was X-rated, the 2nd District Representative and candidate for U.S. Senate changed his position. He now says that Congressman Weiner disgraced the House of Representatives. Mike McDaniel, can you criticize what Joe Donnelly's
done?
No.
I think this is much ado about nothing. You know, I think $5,000 from this guy to Joe Donnelly or whoever he gives his money to is a big nothing in the big scheme of things. There are so many problems that are more serious than this in the world today, and the public could care less about whether or not he gave $5,000 to Joe Donnelly and whether or not Joe Donnelly gave it back or not. I'm just
Republican operatives from Washington get off the computer that charge.
Well, you know, that's what they're in the business of doing, okay? Yeah. But I just think that there's so much time spent on this kind of stuff that it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's just
nothing. Was the Ken Starr investigation along the same lines? I mean, was that a waste of money since it dealt ultimately with... It was? Okay. All right. You're consistent.
Okay. Donnelly at first said we need an ethics investigation.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing was one thing. When it comes up for a second time, as it were, he really needs to go. The money was given to Donnelly last year, and I think he's
actually
correct.
Actually, going back to 2007.
It was 2007. Well, I think the most recent one was 2010. But in any event, he's right, only in the sense that this detracts from what they ought to be doing. They ought to be focusing on the economy and jobs, and this detracts from that. And people are spending too darn much time with it. So I think he's right to give the money back.
Okay. Donnelly is also one of only about a handful of Democrats who have publicly called on Congressman Weiner to leave office. Did he need to do that?
Well, if he's going to disassociate himself from it by giving the money away, then he ought to be consistent about it and say that he should remove himself from office. So, yeah, I think that's fine. And, you know, the congressman has to make a decision, or the House has to determine whether he violated ethics rules and remove him. But, you know, I agree here with the fact that this is a tawdry situation. It does detract from the important business of government, and the sooner it's off the stage, the better.
I mean, everybody likes to blame the media. I typically don't like to blame the media, but I mean, news organizations are helping fuel this because, look, it's a more interesting story. I'm not saying it's certainly a more significant story. It's a more titillating story.
It's on websites.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is going to go for a while. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I mean, the two surveys that I've seen, reputable surveys just in the last 48 hours of constituents in the New York district of Congressman Weiner suggest that well over 50% want him to stay and don't think he should leave over this. So I guess they, in a way, they might have, you could say, should have more impact on his decision making than a congressman from the Midwestern part of the country.
He'll have an impact next year. He's up for election.
Yeah. Well, if he has a district, he may be redistricted out too.
That's true.
There may not be a district for him.
He can always move.
He and Dennis Kucinich can both run in Washington State.
All right. Still
that's
with
true.
This. Are there lessons to be learned by Indiana politicians from the exposure of Representative Wiener's activities?
State Senate Democrat Vi Simpson is on Facebook and Twitter for one simple reason.
Almost everybody is on Facebook.
Republican Senator Jim Merritt has the same motivation.
I have 1,200 friends on Facebook, and I'd say 100 folks follow me on Twitter.
In fact, at state GOP headquarters, there's a concerted effort not only to use the internet in campaigns, but also to convince candidates to take advantage of social media and the opportunity it gives them to communicate with voters. Pete Seat does some of that training. He says he doesn't have a list of do's and don'ts.
I'm guessing you give them some warnings, though.
Well, the big warning is, you know, what you do on social media can be seen by anyone.
And now that everyone is witnessing some of the photos that Congressman Anthony Weiner sent to women he met on Facebook,
some
of the advice handed out at GOP headquarters has new meaning.
No one ever got in trouble for not posting something.
Matt Zaffe there, the Republican GOP headquarters staff. John Katzenberger, is social media a must for modern-day politicians?
It is a must for modern-day politicians, and so I think that Matt's advice there at the end is well-heeded. You need to pay attention because whatever you say, whatever you write, whatever you send is in the public realm. It used to be you used to say, don't say anything that you wouldn't want to see on the front page of the newspaper. Well, don't say anything that might get transmitted and retransmitted and suddenly become viral. That makes you look poor or bad. So I think that, yes, it's vital because it's a very good and effective form of communication, but there needs to be a lot better understanding about how to use it.
One thing this whole episode with Congressman Weiner has done is really kind of bring to light who does use social media and who doesn't. It was a big topic at the State House this week, and some of the old line politicians don't even know what Twitter or Facebook is.
I'd hazard a guess there might be a few old-timers who don't know what email is, and not many, but I mean, there are traditionalists there. And as John says, I mean, there is an upside here. You can reach a lot of people. Look at what Sarah Palin has done with her One Nation bus tour. She has more than 3 million, I think this week, in fact, she crossed the 3 million mark for friends on Facebook.
That's the media again.
She's able to orchestrate a whole bus tour and get crowds without any help from what she would describe, of course, as the mainstream media. Well. So it works in that sense. But even in the fallout, as we've seen after the situation with Representative Weiner, I think people who follow these things said that a third fewer tweets went out this week from Capitol Hill in the wake of this than in the past. Now, whether that's an aberration, people are saying, let's keep your hands off, back away from the tweet for a while, and they'll go back to it next week. I don't know. But there clearly is a real ripple effect of this through the halls of Congress.
This is a way to communicate in many ways with a younger demographic, with younger people. So is it more important for Republicans to be using social media?
I don't know that it's any more important for Republicans to do that, but clearly I think the success of the last Obama presidential campaign sent a message to politicians all across the country because they used it very effectively.
Not just Facebook and Twitter, also text messages.
Absolutely. And I think that's saying to everybody, I've got to be in this business. We have a situation this week where the legislative council for the Indiana General Assembly is voting whether to give all 150 members laptop computers. Now, if somebody would have said that even 5 years ago, that would be a consideration, people would have looked at you like you're crazy. But now they can't live without their computers sitting on their desks. That's what they do. And they use them to communicate with their voters. And now they're going to have laptops where they can go, or not laptops, but
Blackberries.
The pads.
Oh,
and
iPads.
They're voting to whether or not to give them pads. Well, if that's the case, I mean, you know, we're going to be in this business. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
No.
It's
with
us. It's going to only get bigger.
At the Indiana State House, there's a real dichotomy there, though, because they're giving members computers, and members can do whatever they want. They can have access to anything.
Right.
And yet, in both the House and Senate, staff is forbidden access to things like Facebook in most cases, where there's an awful lot of political discussion.
Yeah, I think Mike's right. You're not putting the genie back in the bottle. It's here to stay. The problem with this is, though, is you can't teach judgment. You can't have a list of do's and don'ts. This isn't any different from solder, except that it went viral all the way. When you have no judgment and you have no loyalty, you're going to make mistakes like this. It just happens faster this way. And so I don't think it's the social media at all. It's the judgment of the people involved.
Well, I think that's right. But that's why I wanted to have this discussion about the social media, because it is becoming something that politicians really need to use, need to be aware of.
You can use it, and it's cheap. I mean, you can communicate with people.
And it's so quick.
That's the point. You can get out there and you can do it. It's a great thing. You just have to have some judgment transplant.
Like everything else, you have to do it right.
I don't tweet.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, though.
Planned Parenthood of Indiana went to court this week in an effort to maintain taxpayer funding. Federal Judge Tanya Walton Pratt heard arguments for a request for an injunction that would block Indiana's new abortion law. Planned Parenthood CEO Betty Cockrum and her attorney Ken Falk of the ACLU say that without Medicaid money, 8 clinics will close and 9,300 Medicaid patients will be denied services. The state argued that claims of harm to Planned Parenthood are based on speculation.
Come June 20th, it will be closing clinics. That's not speculative.
We would love to see a ruling by June the 20th so that we don't have to make that very tough decision to disassociate our patients from Planned Parenthood services.
We're simply saying, if your business model includes abortion, then you're not eligible for this tax money. The federal government happens to disagree. They're using $4.3 billion of a club to try to beat states into submission.
And that's State Senator Scott Schneider, the author of the new law, reacting to the possibility that Indiana could lose all of its Medicaid funding if the new law remains in place, what attorneys for the state this week called the nuclear option. John Schwanis, two tests here. Is Planned Parenthood likely to win? And will it be permanently harmed without an injunction? That's what the judge has to decide. Did it meet both of those tests?
I'd say short answer, yes. We'll see what the judge, she's looking for 10 days at least to respond and to offer her decision here. But it appears that she took great interest in the federal Medicaid office's interpretation of how this does or doesn't comport with its standards. Given the amount of attention she paid to that aspect of this case, it seems pretty clear to the layman, certainly, that you have a situation where an otherwise qualified provider is being treated differently, which is a no-no, to use a legal term, a no-no under the under those guidelines.
And well, Scott Schneider says this is the state deciding who it's going to contract with, and he compared it to highway construction.
Well, I think that's a dangerous comparison because, as Mike would say, that's apples and dump trucks. We saw when the state privatized FSSA, the problems that can occur when you do that when you're dealing with social services. And that's essentially what we're talking about here with Planned Parenthood. I think that it'll be interesting to see what the judge rules, but I also believe that this won't be the last word on the issue. Regardless of what her decision is, losing side is going to appeal. Yeah.
Mike predicted that last week that it would go to the appeals
court. That's a mistake. If Greg Zeller appeals this when they lose, I think it's a mistake.
Assuming that the state's going to lose.
I think they're going to lose. And Scott Snyder, maybe he doesn't understand that Medicaid is a federal statute. It's a federal program, and it's got federal money in it. Okay, now states can set some parameters for Medicaid as to what services are offered and certain general qualifications, and they certainly put money in it. But you can't, the situation of contracting with contractors, it's like saying that some contractor does something you don't like, which is perfectly legal, and therefore you're barred. You can't do that.
He also says that money is fungible. His argument also is that money is fungible and that they could use some of this money for abortion services.
Well, then he doesn't understand how the federal
audit system works. Well, and what came out in the hearing is that the way it works is that services are provided and then Medicaid is billed and they pay directly for those services. There's a lot of misunderstanding here.
Well, 28 Republican United States senators this week sent a letter asking the federal government to reconsider their decision. That was interesting to me that that many Republican senators would do that,
including Senator Kozak,
on the Indiana case. So this thing is far from over. It will end up in the Seventh Circuit and then eventually, I think, the Supreme Court.
All right, final item now. Indianapolis will host the Big Ten football championship game through at least 2015. The conference made the announcement this week, extending what had been a one-year deal to 5 years. The Big Ten will also hold its basketball championships here every other year through 2016. Chicago was the other contender for the games. Lucas Oil Stadium appears to be the difference as it offers indoor football in December. Conseco Fieldhouse and Chicago's United Arena will go back to rotating the men's and women's basketball games from 2013 through 2016.
City is going to be vibrant and alive. There are going to be tremendous opportunities for kids at fan fests and youth clinics and so forth. And so it's a celebration. And obviously, this is an important Big Ten city. It's got a strong tradition with the Big Ten. And I think the whole city will celebrate this announcement.
Yeah, Susan Williams there, the Indiana Sports Corporation and Delaney. Big deal?
Oh, it's a huge deal. It's wonderful for the city. And kudos to the Sports Corporation and Susan Williams for working so hard to get it. I think it's just huge for us, and it couldn't be better.
Are people in Indianapolis taking news like this for granted, do you think?
I think so in a lot of ways. We've built these great facilities. We've planned our entire downtown on trying to bring these events in. This football Big Ten championship is going to end up being an absolutely huge deal.
This is a big thing worth tweeting about.
Yeah.
And retweeting. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.